matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're about 20 minutes into hour two. Little delayed to get to Andrew, and then right at the end there, sort of, you know, you're at the mercy. But Casey has a couple of different ideas, Skype, and he says Casey says FaceTime even might be an option to make a better connection with Andrew. But we hadn't called him on his Australian phone, only on his when he was in Hong Kong. So that's all right. We'll make it work. News from just got an alert as Tony Black, perfect timing, as Tony Black joins us. The Philadelphia Inquirer, which I subscribe to online, breaking news, all Pennsylvania schools, Tony, will remain closed through the end of the school year. So Professor Black will be continuing his classes.
I'm a school teacher, I'm a landscaper, I'm a semi-retired jockey. So, yeah, we'll keep everything going. And, this break, you know, has made everybody try to make do, and we're trying to make do. I'm sitting on my back porch now looking at my backyard after I put 35 bags of mulch out there and mowed it and edged it and did the front yard, and I'm thinking, what can I do today? I got the kids sitting inside. It's rainy. Looks like the sun ain't going to come out till late. Can't even get them outside that much. But, yeah, I see the school year not continuing here either. You know, they haven't announced it officially. But
no, they just did. They just did.
Something. I mean, that's in Pennsylvania.
Oh, right? You're in Jersey. That's right. That's right. You're in Jersey. You're on the other side of the border. That's right.
But I'm going to tell you, we're going to follow suit. They're not going back to school. And, you know, Maddie, she's been off, Pete's been off, and I don't see them going back to school, so I'm continuing my school teaching career. But I'll tell you one thing, with Pete, he's really conscientious. He checks in his school attendance at 9:30, 9:45, and he's doing his schoolwork on the virtual school system right now. And Maddie, I keep her busy. Of course, you know, she's disabled. She goes to a special school. But we've done a lot of things that keep her busy. And I make her get up and walk around. I make her get on the trampoline. And she gets mad because I make her walk and exercise, you know, too much, she thinks. But she's also given me a lot of exercise. You know, I'm on the trampoline with her. And we're going
nice.
To taking long walks in the three-wheel stroller. So we're keeping busy. It's not like that big of an adjustment. I know the school for her gets in touch with me, making sure that we're staying active. I'm saying, this ain't a whole lot of change. It just has more time to spend with her because I'm not sending her to school for 5 or 6 hours.
Well, you're keeping busy, and then you got your mother to keep tabs on as well.
Yeah, and she stopped getting mad at me since I haven't let her go to the dollar store in a month. She isn't going to Wegmans, and I said, just give me the list, I'll go. And I found a couple N95 masks, and I asked Kylie, I said, where did we get these N95 masks? She says, I bought them, because of dusting and doing the housework. I figured I'd have the N95s to protect me from the dust and the housework that I don't do. I said, they're brand new. They've never been used. I said, so, you know, whatever you bought them for, they're brand new and not used. Yeah, so shows how much housework she does around here. But don't tell her I'm talking about her like that. But, we're just trying to follow the rules and social distancing. The only one that doesn't understand the social distancing around here is my dog. I take him for walks, and he just doesn't get it. Or else he understands that animals, other than tigers, animals are kind of must have an immunity, or it doesn't usually attack the animals. Because every dog I go past and every little kid I go past, he wants to jump and play and say hi to him. So my dog doesn't understand social distancing, but everybody else does.
I love it. Well, we could have used we could have used some social distancing in the race that started the pick five at Fawner on Tuesday. I know you didn't watch the replay, Tony, but one part of this that you can address that came up in the discussion yesterday, and you're uniquely qualified to do this. Explain the differences and the way in which the configurations contribute to problems like we had bunching up and on the turns. Basically, a bull ring configuration, a 5/8, you know, versus a larger, a mile oval or even larger. Explain what a bull ring does and why it's a little different, and things like what we saw Tuesday, not all that unusual.
Well, I didn't see it, but bull rings are a totally different configuration. You have shorter stretches and tighter turns. I've ridden on tracks like Timonium. They were 5/8 of a mile. Marlboro racetrack was 3/4 of a mile. Timonium, I don't think in the beginning was even a true 5/8 of a mile. It was less than 5/8 of a mile. But the thing that you have with bull rings is you're going to have horses, hopefully, and riders helping their horse utilize their leads efficiently and effectively. Because you're going around turns, horses can go around a turn on the right lead. They're just not as well coordinated on the right lead going around turn as they are the left lead. The left lead helps them negotiate the turn more smoother. When you come out of a turn and you want to, and it's a tighter turn and you're coming to a shorter stretch, since horses have been using, if they're using their leads properly, when they come to the stretches, you want to pop them over to the right lead. When you pop them over to the right lead, you usually maybe bring them out a little bit and sway them in. Well, the mistake that riders make in that particular situation is at the elbow, where you want to gain momentum coming to a stretch, you know, or you want to gain position coming to a turn, like let's say going down the backside. The worst thing you can do is try to use your horse at the elbow of a turn, either going into the turn or coming out of the turn. You want to make sure that when you use your horse to take and try to get forward momentum, that the turn or the horses that have switched leads have already done so. You don't go in, like even on a mile track, you don't go in on the inside of a group of horses at the 3/8 pole because you're going into a turn. And those horses will have a tendency to move out and then to move in. Well, when they move in, if you're there, you're just going to be a casualty of war. But in a 3/4 of a mile or 5/8 of a mile racetrack, it even is more exaggerated what a horse does when he hits a turn, you know, because they are changing leads more because they negotiate turns better on their left lead. Now, you know, a lot of times people say, yeah, but he comes down the stretch on his wrong lead. Well, on a mile racetrack, you know, you horses have a turn that's wider, and they can go around that turn easily on either lead, but it's preferred to go around turn on the left lead. You know, leads are like this. Put a suitcase in your hand that's 25 pounds and carry it. And then as you carry it and your right hand gets tired, you switch it over to your left hand because that's the fresh hand and muscle on the left side. Well, leads are the same way with horses. They have a fresh lead and a lead that they utilize more easily going around turns. On a 5/8 mile track or 3/4 mile track, it's even more important for the jockey to cue the horse in on what lead to utilize. Because, of course, the turns are tighter, and you want them to negotiate the turn efficiently and effectively and comfortably, where their hind end's following the front end comfortably. And when you see horses coming down the stretch, of course, maybe everybody wants to see him come down the stretch on the right lead. I want to see a horse come down the stretch on their fresh lead. A horse can run straight just as fast on either lead when they're running straight. When they're running around turns, of course, the lead to be used is the left lead. It's the most comfortable lead. But coming down the stretch, I think it's overplayed when it comes to what lead they're on. Let them be on their fresh lead. If it happens to be the left lead because they have used it less and they've negotiated turns with the right lead, let them be on the left lead. I always let them be on the fresh lead, the strongest lead, whatever they wanted to be. And a lot of times, you know, jockeys can't cue a horse in because they're paying attention to position going into a first turn. So they don't cue them in to their leads because they're focusing on position. But, you know, it is some horses, though, they're really able to know what they're supposed to do, and they've been trained to do it, and they're comfortable doing it. You know, the other thing that people have to take into consideration when it comes to leads, what is their most comfortable lead, and which one doesn't have maybe some nagging issue that causes them to not use it just 100% properly? But I don't know what happened at Bonner Park, but if it comes to turns, you know, jockeys have to really be aware of what they're doing going into the turn and not moving going into the turn. You're better off moving, maybe coming out of the turn, but not moving going into the turn and getting position.
Well, and that's exactly the situation. I mean, it was right at the point on the turn, Tony, that essentially, you know, the horse that is interfered with and that was elevated right at that point puts a head and neck squeezes, you know, trying to basically come, you know, inside the leader. And you know, really, by all rights, Dakota Wood, who was on the leader, all he did was just, you know, kind of cut the corner at that point and essentially, you know, shuts off the pursuer. This Chris Fackler, and you know, Fackler stands up in the irons and comes to almost a stop, perseveres and you know, finishes second and gets put up. But you know, to me, I understand what Wood was doing. I mean, why is he supposed to vacate that lane and let the guy come up his inside?
He's not supposed to. In fact, what I used to say to guys that we used to bitch and complain about trying to come up on the inside, I used to tell them when we got back to the jock's room, and very rarely did I get taken down for something like that, you know, not letting someone through. I said, that's not an easy pass lane. You don't utilize that lane like it's easy pass, you know?
Yep.
And the price you paid is you didn't get through. And coming out of a turn, you know, you want to pop a horse over to the right lead. You're going to let them stay out a little bit and make sure they have enough room towards the inside to sway them in. You use your weight the same way you would ride a bike, Steve, and not touch the handlebars to go left or right. You could use your weight. You let the bike go straight, and then when you want to make a left turn with it or come to a straightaway with a horse, and you want them to pop over to the right lead, you sway your weight towards the inside. You have it out and then sway it in. And the horse will feel that change in your body weight and pop over to the right lead. You know, it's something that even becomes more strategical on a three-quarters of a mile racetrack, because you're constantly in the latter stages of the race trying to make your horse be as comfortable as he can going around the turn and coming out of the turn as comfortable as you can make it. You want to sway him in to pop him over to the right lead. And if a jock gets behind you, doesn't realize that, then he's making the mistake, not the rider on the lead. You know, the horse that's behind you, that jock should know better than at the elbow or coming to the head of the stretch. That ain't the place to go. You know, I used to love, like, sitting on horses around a turn. If someone was smart enough not to go up onto the inside of me, of course, you would hedge them out a little bit. But you would always maintain an icon, you know, a view of the inside, because somebody else might figure, oh, he's hedging that outside horse out. you know, to cause him a little bit of ground and momentum, and I'm going to go to the inside. And just at that would be the big mistake. No, you're not. You come around. That's what basically it was old school riders and riders that rode on bull rings taught even the mile rider, the jocks like me that had the bug and came around and rode in the mile tracks and had very little experience in the half-mile tracks. You know, the inside, you might not want to be there, but you don't want to let anybody through. It's almost discrediting your riding experience and your riding skill to leave a wide open path on the inside. And when we were riding at Keystone Park, Philadelphia Park, most of the time because of the bank of the track and the crown of the track, the inside was a dead place to be. But you didn't want to ride the whole race on the inside just to save ground because it usually the track, you know, many days was a little slower on the inside. So you would stay out off of the fence. But you certainly, in the latter stages of the race, didn't want somebody to come through because they had a lot of horse and they could overcome the bias of the track and get through on you. You still wanted them to come around. So you stayed off of the fence, but you always had contact with and knowledge of what was going on the inside. And on the bull ring, that's important. You always want to know what's going on the inside. You maybe didn't want to lay your horse up against the fence because it was tighter turns and you wanted to give your horse a chance to, you know, hedge out and then come back in and make the turn less tight and tighter than what it feels for a horse. But you certainly didn't want to leave the inside open and make it that an easy pass lane. Like I used to tell them kids, it ain't an easy pass lane. Go around if you don't like it.
Yeah, and you know, you actually hinted to a degree, Tony, about how often in a circumstance like this, and I'll send you a link so you can see, so you can watch it. But you know, I said that it seemed like a 70-30, you know, situation, that 7 out of 10 times they would leave the leader up, maybe 3 out of 10 they would take the winner down. You know, some people are carrying on like it's the most egregious call ever, and you know, to me, anytime there's these situations, you say to yourself, all right, I mean, I can see why they went in this direction. I mean, how often in your experience, you know, percentage wise, you know, do you get taken down when you're on the lead like that?
You probably hit on a pretty close, you know, percentage, you know, 70-30, depending on the exact point where the horse came in, coming out of the turn, depending on, to some degree, how much the rider on the second horse grandstanded it. You know, some guys are better actors than others. You know, we used to go back to jocks room, look at the rerun when someone did get taken down for something like that. And, of course, the jocks would have various different opinions. And the most thing I'd say is you go to Hollywood with an act like that. You know, you should be in Hollywood. That's a grandstand. But you know what? Stewards have their own opinion. I always felt if I was ever, would never be in a steward stand. But if it was questionable, leave it alone. Why penalize that owner? Owners, you know, they
and the betters.
And the betters, absolutely. I'm for the owners and the betters, and leave it alone.
Tony, before we go, who was the best guy in your career over the last 50 years? Who was the best at selling it in the irons? Not so much on the phone. That's a whole different story. But who could make it look like they were affected the best?
Let me think. Boy, that's a tough question, and it's hitting me with a blank spot right now. I'm sure I'll think of somebody. But there were riders, yeah, that were better grandstanders than others.
Well, you know what they say, Tony. If you look around a table playing poker and you can't figure out who the mark is, it's you. So in this case, the guy that's probably the best seller of you know, to the stewards is probably you.
Hey, you know what? I think I was pretty good on the phone. Whatever I did out there on the racetrack, on the phone, I was good in two ways. I was good in defending myself, you know, and I was also good in saying how bad I got bothered, you know, which didn't sound
exactly
like you're a crybaby. Well, crybabies don't win in this business. You know, crybabies get labeled a crybaby, and it, here he goes again. So,
on the phone, I've told this story before, but I was down at Gulfstream, and we're in that gap, you know, where they come from the underground paddock, and they go on the track. And we're watching a race there, and I was with Mark Hennig, and Hennig had Joe Bravo aboard, and I forget who the other one was. It might have been Ibarcoa. I'm pretty sure it was somebody, maybe Manny Cruz. Anyway, there's an incident in the stretch, and they start flashing the numbers, and Mark sees the jocks go to get on the phone, and Mark turns to me and says, "Ooh, I like my chances. I got a good talker."
You know what? You just jarred my memory when you said Joe Bravo, because him and I would have worse times, and sometimes I used to feel like he hated riding with me. But him, and I'll tell you another one, it just jarred my memory because she was a grandstander and she used to hate my style, was Julie Crone. I'll never forget. I was standing behind her at the same trail, Julie racetrack, and she's complaining because she went up on the inside of me and she shouldn't have. And the bottom line was the number stayed up. But I'll never forget when she got on the phone, she said she's telling the stewards, and she really grandstanded it, and I just got her out of there in a way that it was more than within the rules. And she's saying, Tony Black, he never even seen me there. You know he wears glasses. He's blind. The guy's blind. He didn't even see me. You know he didn't see me. He should come down. He didn't even see me. And believe me, if I didn't see him, I did a good job of not seeing her and keeping her out of there. And she was on that phone bitching for about, I don't know how long. And I'm thinking, you done? And the steward said, yeah. So the stewards, they got me on the phone. They said, she said, you're blind. You wear glasses. You didn't see her there. I said, believe me, I saw her there, and she shouldn't have been there. And that's all I said. She shouldn't have been there. And I saw her. She'll get used to my style. And that's the way we left it. And it was a buoy in the number state home.
there's a number of jocks now that we started this. If I go survey, Julie's name is going to come up plenty in this discussion, because Rich Migliori will tell you those stories, and so will Nikki Gaga.
Yeah, Nikki's got the story. They rode a lot with her, one thing, you didn't always have to fear. Because you could sure hear. She had that squeaky loud voice that was shrill. It would shrill and go through you. But she was a good competitor, and she really accomplished a lot. But I'll never forget the day of Bowie when she was yelling and screaming on the phone at the stewards, and the number stayed up.
Well, Tony, and I was waiting for Jay Hovde. Jay's going to join us tomorrow, and Jay will have a rebuttal, but there's a lot of fun things to talk about with Jay, including his article that he wrote for Smithsonian Magazine, the new issue. But Jay came back with this. He said Chris McCarron might have won 200 races on the phone.
Listen, when Chris started out, we were old riders in Marlin.
Sure.
Greg was his brother and was a well-established rider, came out of New England, came to Marlin, was well-established in Marlin, and here comes this little bug boy, and he's stabled at Bowie, and I'm trying to think who was, I can remember the barn he was in and everything, and then he started riding, and he caught fire right away. I mean, he came on the scene, and everybody knew he was around right away. It was no surprise with what he did when it came to his overall career. But yeah, Chris, remember the day he started in Marlin. But I saw a lot of them start. I can remember I saw Jeremy Rose start at Delaware Park. But I've seen a lot of kids start, and I never forgot the people that gave me a start, Charlie Coco and Chris Rogers, the old Chris Rogers, who one of the horses he rode, Lincoln Road, finished second in the Kentucky Derby.
You bet.
He was kind enough to take me under his wing. and taught me how to sit on a horse. And now you've heard all the stories, and I know you got a lot of people waiting to get on. You listen, for as little as going on in racing in, at this particular time because of coronavirus, you are keeping the show interesting and informative, and thank you so much for all you do, Steve. You really keep the good word out there.
Tony, very kind, and take care. Take care of the kids and Kylie and your mom, and we will talk next week.
All right. Take care, Steve. Love you. Keep up the good work. Bye now.
Love you, too. Tony Black.
Best health to you and Gina. Bye.
The one and only, folks, Tony Black. That was great. We'll take a break here. Steve Haskins going to join us. We got plenty to do with Steve. Alan Foreman with the news from yesterday, about 24 hours ago, Match Series 20 going to be canceled. And Alan will give us the details, and if they're going to try to maybe come up with salvage something, or if they'll just table it all till 2021. And also good timing to talk to Alan because the Mid-Atlantic meeting last week by teleconference, I went to it last year at Delaware Park. It was fascinating. But, of course, the Mid-Atlantic plan to reduce injuries and fatalities that has been very successful. And we'll get an update on everything that went on at the meeting as well. And also see, obviously, Governor Hogan has got, you know, big issues to deal with. But at some point soon, he will be signing the redevelopment plan for Laurel and Pimlico as well, which passed the legislature in Annapolis. And we'll see if there's any update on that front from Alan as well. Little less than half of this Thursday get-together. Weekend preview tomorrow and very good racing at Oaklawn and a couple of good cards at Gulfstream and Tampa as well. So we'll look forward to that. I mentioned Jay Hubdy's going to join us early in the show tomorrow as well. Jay Pridman and much, much more. Let's take a timeout here. Haskin, next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I heard the news. There's bulls rocking tonight. Gonna hold my baby tight as I can. Tonight she'll know I'm a mighty man. I heard the news. There's bulls rocking tonight.
We're back at the races. 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Steve Haskin joining us, and as we've sort of noticed over the last 3 weeks, as racing, you know, kind of limited, very good fodder, whether it's racing history, whether it's conjecture fictional accounts of things, Steve finding plenty to write about. And I think even this week's series of shows that talked about some of the late 80s, early 90s innovative journalistic endeavors, Metro Turf and Figs Form and Racing Times, I think that even got Steve motivated as well. Steve, good morning.
The Racing Times made my career. The Racing Times got me out of the library. They needed all the ammunition they could get. the editor for years wouldn't let me write. I was writing freelance. I was writing for Thoroughbred Record, and I was a regular correspondent for Thoroughbred Times. I was, going to the Triple Crown. I was covering all of New Jersey racing. And, the editor wouldn't let me write. He just had a bug up his behind. And then, when Racing Times came along, and the Racing Form had three people at the Breeders' Cup. Ed Fontaine, Jack Wilson, who was a chart caller, and I think it was Mike Martin, the photographer, but Mike Martin, who was the California correspondent. And that was it. They had three people covering all the Breeders' Cup that year. The Racing Times had 17 people covering it. And I mean, they just had everybody there. And it was just amazing. So finally, they were having a meeting, and the editors and the publisher was in there too, Bill Williams. And they said, and everybody's saying, how come Steve's not writing for us? He's writing for everybody else. He's not writing for us. And, the editor, Fred Grossman, he said, nah, one of these days or something, blah, blah, blah. And then all the editors just ganged up on him. And, they told it to the publisher. And the publisher said, yeah, I was wondering that myself. And the next thing I know, they called me out. I was out of the library after 20 years. I started in the library I started there in 69. I got into the library in 1970, the next year, and I was in there until 1990. And I was, like I said, I was doing a lot of, I was writing for Stud and Stable magazine in Europe. I was writing a column for the Sporting Chronicle for free. That was my first thing. So I was doing a lot of writing, a lot of features for Thoroughbred Record. So next thing you know, I packed up, and by that time, by the way, I could not stand being in a library. I mean, having to file pictures and bring photos out, and just say, ugh, this is like, it was great in there. I had all the bound volumes and all the old clippings, which were like, if you blow on them, they fall apart. But we were starting to do microfiche at the time, and the form was like backwards, So they asked me, they said, why don't you come out and go on the editorial desk? You're gonna write for us. So back then we're doing it on typewriters. So I went out there, and I remember the first day out there. I'd never done anything like this before. I'd never written Deadline before. So I'm sitting out there, and the day I started, Fred Capicella died. And they had me write his obit.
Wow.
And I said, oh, my God, how am I going to write a whole obit on Fred Capicella that's due, like, in a few hours? I said, oh, my God, I got to do research and stuff like that. But, I managed to do it, and I think I did a pretty good obit on him. And then I just started doing features. And, you know, that was a big broadsheet. We had so much space. And I had these gigantic features of betting all over the world. I mean, I was the first person to write about betting in Hong Kong, Japan, Australia. You know, I contacted everybody there on the wagering and the statistics and how much is being bet there and all the gobs of money that was being bet in Japan. This is in 1991. So I did all these wild features. I went to the Wallkill correctional facility to do the first ever feature on the Thoroughbred Racing Foundation, who had their program where they had the inmates taking care of the horses.
Right, sure, of course.
Yeah, I spent the whole day there, just me and these guys over there, and then so I'm interviewing them, and I said, so, you know, what are you in for? A murder? Oh, I said, oh, okay. So I'm here with all these hardened criminals. And they were like pussycats. they just loved their horses so much. So I did that feature. I did so many full page features. But if it wasn't for the Racing Times. And then one day I got a call. This is like 8 months later or so, later in the year. Because, I mean, yeah, the Racing Times was just killing us as far as editorial content. Because every top writer was writing for them. And like I said, they dominated the Breeders' Cup. And I get a call from Lauren Stitch, who did a Bloodlines column. And she called me up and said, they just shut us down. They said, the people here from the Racing Forum, they won't even let us take anything. Everybody just had to leave. Couldn't even get anything. And if you tried to come out with something, I mean, it was like a Gestapo type thing. They just shut them down, and that was it. And that was the end of the Racing Times. You know, and I continued to do features, and then they sent Ed and I down to Kentucky to cover the Derby to do a work patrol and features. So I was writing features down in Kentucky, and Ed and I were doing, I would write it, do the works, and Ed would edit the hell out of it. I'd say, well, what are you doing? I mean, there's nothing wrong with this copy. So Ed would edit it, but it was by the two of us. We call it the Work Patrol. And then in 1994, Joe Hirsch, who had been doing Derby Doings, he started that in 1956, been doing it forever. He was already having Parkinson's and stuff, and he called George Burnett. Now was the editor of the Forum at that time.
Sure.
By then, and Joe Hirsch called up George Burnett and said, "He said I can't do Derby Doings anymore." I said, "Give it to Steve." I said, "Whoa!" So I became the lead writer to covering the Kentucky Derby. So, but I mean, you know, I don't know if they would have done it for the Racing Times. So I think, and then as it turns out, all the people from the Racing Times wound up taking over the Racing Forum.
That's right. Everybody came over.
Yeah. So then I got relegated to, like, Bloodlines columnist. I guess I was fortunate that they kept me because they got rid of, they couldn't wait to get rid of Fontaine and everybody. And yeah, everybody was getting fired at that time. Well, a lot of the editors. And then when the Racing Times took over, they brought in their own people. But they kept me, and I had lunch in the city with Steve Crist and Rich Rosenbush, who was the editor who knew nothing about horse racing. But, you know, they made me a Bloodlines columnist. And they had a big thing at the ESPN zone in Manhattan announcing who was doing everything. So I said, you know, listen, you know, it was like being demoted from colonel to sergeant. You know, it's just like, Bloodlines column, and, you know, that's it. You have to cover in the Derby for all those years. And then I got offered the job at the Blood Horse, and I snatched it up. And, that's what happened there. But, you know, Racing Times. I remember during, while the Racing Times was publishing, I remember Jay Hovde saying, Never have so much been written by so many and read by so few. all the work they put in, it's just, you just, you know, in those days, you just could not beat the racing form. I mean, even though they had all the innovations that they brought over afterwards, the racing form, you know, everybody who stood in the racing form's path, whether it be sports eye or whether it be fixed form or whether it be racing times, they just couldn't do it. They just, the form just ran them into the ground. But I did all kinds of features. In fact, you're talking about all kinds of features. Yes, I am the person, by the way, who flew with Alan Paulson and his jet.
That's what I thought.
That was my idea to do that, because we had a big symposium in Arizona, and I flew from Phoenix to San Diego, because the Eclipse Awards that year was at the Hotel Coronado, and that's where they stayed. So I went there to do some coverage of that, and I came up with the idea because they were Cigar had, you know, everything. Team Cigar won everything. It was a clean sweep. Owner, trainer, horse, jockey, all won Eclipse Awards. And it was the Eclipse Award. The next day was the Don Handicap, where Cigar was making his 96 debut. So I said, yeah, you know, I mean, rather than fly back home and stuff like that, I said, maybe I can get a ride there, and then I'll fly back home from Miami. So I arranged it to fly right from the Eclipse Awards there, and that was and I did a full page feature on my whole on the whole trip, which was pretty wild. I mean, Alan and Madeline Paulson were on there. Bill Mott and his wife, Jerry Bailey and his wife, and Joe Hirsch, of course. And I remember thinking, if this plane goes down, by the way, my name is going to be a mere footnote at the bottom of the story. I said, nobody's going to care. I said, I'm going to be the last one mentioned here. But it was a wild experience. And you got to remember, at the time, the Gulfstream 4 was the fastest plane in the world. It set an all-time record for flying around the world and back. And normally Paulson does the flying, but he was kind of knocked out from the Eclipse Awards, and then he had to get up. And the plane was what was due to arrive in Miami, it was Fort Lauderdale, I think it was. It was due to arrive at 5 a.m. I mean, from San Diego to Miami was 4 hours. So fast that plane is. So he hired a pilot. And, you know, he just relaxed and, you know, rolled up his sleeves and unhooked his suspenders and just relaxed. And Madeline, who was a former stewardess, flight attendant, whatever you want to call him, but back then I guess they were still called stewardesses, I don't know. But she was a stewardess for Pan Am, and she just took over. I mean, she came out, she had all kinds of pastries and cheeses and sandwiches and everything. And served them. And then at one time, I started dozing off, and I look up, and Madeline's like putting a blanket over me. it was pretty wild, you know. Oh, there was one other passenger, Madeline's dog Oliver, who probably was the most important person on the entire most important living being on the entire plane. I mean, when they in the hotel, when they check into a hotel, Alan and Madeline. Oliver gets his own room.
That's great.
At one point, I remember Madeline telling me, she says, I was up and she said, Steve, why don't you go up into the cockpit? We're going to be flying over a checkpoint Cigar. That's where they got the name from. It's in the Gulf of Mexico. We're going to be flying right over Cigar. So I said, okay. So I'm getting up. And meanwhile, Bill Mott's legs are sprawled across the aisle. Oliver is sleeping in the aisle. And I'm trying, I said, you know, there's no way in the world I'm going to time when I wake them up. So, you know, I'm trying to step over this dog and step over Bill Mott's legs. And finally get in the cockpit. And it was like looking at a simulator, looking out the front window. And we're heading, and I'll never forget this, by the way, we're heading towards Florida. And, you know, it's nothing but black, you know, which is the Gulf of Mexico. And then you see this long row of Lights, which is the western coast of Florida. And then beyond it, it's all black, which is the Everglades. And then way in the distance, beyond that, is all lights again, which is the east coast of Florida. And you could see it all. And it was like wow, this is really, really, really wild. And I remember Bill was kind of, you know, nervous. He said, you know, here we are accepting all these awards one night, and now we've got to run the next day. And I could just see that, you know, I could just see us going to Gulfstream and getting beat, and then leaving, you know, with our tail between our legs. You know, so he was kind of, you know, apprehensive about it. But that was the and this was this plane, by the way, this was before all the big jets had all the TV, the monitors that showed you where you are with the little map and with the altitude and the temperature outside. This plane had that. No, I've never seen it before. It didn't, you know, they didn't have it on the big jumbo jets until afterwards. So this was like an innovative thing. But, you know, it was like riding on Goldfinger's plane. Everything was gold, and I mean, it was anyway. So I did a whole story on that. And then, you know, of course, went there and Cigar won the Don Handicap the next day. But that was quite a trip. That was one of my big assignments for the racing form.
I love it. One of the other stories that came up, and obviously you listened to Evan and Eddie from the other day, but the Mr. Frisky story, which you were integral in.
Second, by the way. I'll back up just a little bit. Leading up to the this flight, by the way, I don't know if I ever told this story. Was at the Eclipse Awards, you know, which is like the, you know, like the most boring thing ever. But it's sitting next to me, Joanne Noor had brought a friend to sit at our table. You know, I got all the racing form brass there. Joe Hirsch is there, Jack Farnsworth, who was the publisher, and Neil Cook, the editor. And Joanne Noor brought a friend who was an Indian princess. When she was young, she was promised to this big time doctor who lived in Beverly Hills. She didn't even know him. And so she had to go and live, you know, to marry him. So she was sent there, and she married him, and she lived in Beverly Hills. And she's sitting next to me, by the way, and she's, like, so bored out of her gourd that, without going into details, by the way, but she started doing stuff under the table. And meanwhile, right behind her, sitting on a chair, is her chauffeur, okay? So her chauffeur is sitting there, just waiting there. And she's, like, doing all this stuff. I said, what the hell's going on here? I said, what? I said, well, what is this? And she was telling me. She says, I can't stay here much longer. She says, I'm getting bored. She says, will you take me somewhere? I go, huh? She goes, I want you to come with me. I go, oh yeah, right. She said, no, really, I want you to take me. You know, I want to go somewhere. So all I kept picturing myself, by the way, as William Holden laying face down in a swimming pool, you know, at the end of Sunset Boulevard.
Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah. You know, I said, oh, that's it. I'm going to go to this woman's palatial mansion in Beverly Hills, and then the husband's going to walk in and shoot. And I said, no, look, you know, first of all, I'm married, you know, but meanwhile, Joe Hirsch and Neil Cook and Jack Farnsworth are cracking up because they see what she's doing under the table.
Unbelievable.
So finally, she's wearing this incredible-looking shawl, beautiful shawl. And it's like, she says, here, feel this. Feel this shawl. And I touch it, and it's like so soft. And I said, wow, I never touched anything like that. It was just so delicate. And she says, this shawl is made from the chin hairs of the Himalayan mountain goat.
Hmm.
She said, this shawl is $5,000. She says, I will give it to you to give to your wife if you take me somewhere. I said, well, it's very tempting. I'm sure my wife would love to have it. I said, but not
unbelievable.
Quite. Not quite that. And then finally I told her, I said, no, look, I got a private jet waiting for me. I got to fly somewhere, and you know, as soon as I told her that, she just dumped me like a hot potato. She realized she was getting nowhere. But that, I mean, that was my one and only Eclipse Award, by the way, that I went to.
I've been delivered her name. Do you remember her name?
Yes, I do. I don't know if I should say it or not, but
all right. Well, because
well, let's put it this way: her first name is the first name of two racing writers in California.
Interesting.
Why? How do you have her name?
Jay Hovde is listening, and Jay must be laughing too.
That was her first name.
We may have to compare notes tomorrow when Jay visits. Pretty funny. That's great, Steve. Let's get in a little bit of current horse news, which frankly,
great to have nothing to talk about.
Well, no, we're busy with racing, we have conversations like this. However, this Oaklawn Stake on Saturday.
Oh my God, what a great! Both of them, the Oaklawn Mile. The Mile's
great too. Handicap. Yes. Yes.
And this race is not that much worse than the Arkansas Derby.
I was going to say, I said that, in fact, this morning. I said the Arkansas Derby, well, the Arkansas Derby is going to have Nadal and Charlatan from Baffert.
Yeah, but there are Arkansas Derby fields that are not quite as strong as this.
This is a nice group of horses, and 13 of them, and some thoughts about this group.
Well, I mean, first off, you know, you've got Basin, so you've got a top-class horse there, and then with Baffert sending 1,000 words. By the way, you're talking about how racing nowadays makes strange bedfellows. Just look at these combinations. You got Joe Talamo riding for Bob Baffert, and you got Martin Garcia riding for Todd Pletcher, and you got Tyler Bayes riding for Steve Asmussen, and you got Joel Rosario riding for Richard Baltus. I mean, it's like all these crazy jockey trainer combinations. But, yeah, I mean, Basin obviously has to be one of the favorites. He's coming off, you know, I thought an excellent 30. You know, he was beaten almost 8 lengths by Nadal. It was his first start in 6 months since the hopeful. And, you know, he made a good move in the race, and I thought he ran a very good race. The next horse, by the way, I don't know if you remember in the call, but Vic Stauffer called Coach Bahi like he was going to win the race. It doesn't look like it on the line, but he was like right there in the stretch, you know, and he was like 60 something to one. And he looked like he was going to be right there. Mr. Big News, I mean, he's been highly touted early on when he started getting good. He ran a very good race in the Risen Star, excellent. And, of course, with Baffert sending 1,000 words, I mean, that's adding a lot. If that horse wins this race, you know, he's going to be right back in the, I hate to say the Derby picture. I mean, there is no Derby picture. He's going to be right back in the picture for top three-year-olds. We don't know how good Sir Rick is. I mean, he's a horse that dominated at Sunland Park and in Houston. And, you know, he's got a really good record. He won the Mind That Bird Derby very impressively. Shoplifted has always been a good horse and actually ran a pretty good race in the Southwest. He was a good fourth. And he actually got huge speed figures when he won the Springboard Mile, beating, Ansa Ran and, you know, some pretty good horses in there. So you got to look at him. I tell you one thing. If you're looking for, like, a big price in here, take a look at this horse, Flapjack. Just, you know, watch his race in the Gotham.
Yep.
This horse was like wide every step of the way. And when you look at his line, you can see that he moves up. They've got him ninth on the line. They've got him ninth by 1.5. That's how bunched up this field is. That's why I like, you know, attachment rates race, because he was stuck in traffic in there. This horse was like wide all the way. And they have him as third by a length at the quarter pole. But if you watch the race, He practically got the lead. I mean, he ranged up on Mischievous Alex probably by a head, a neck, somewhere in there. He was right up there, but he had gone wide the whole way, and he got tired, but he was just, you know, he was just barely beaten. He got nipped by two horses for fourth at the end, so, and he was 50-1 in there. So he looks like he could be a really nice horse. I think he's getting better. His numbers are getting better.
He was my play in the Gotham, and we talked about it extensively.
Really?
Going into it. And, you know, he'd been away since September. I mean, it was a lengthy layoff, and I don't think Jack Sisterson was disappointed with the effort at all. I'm intrigued when I saw that he showed up in this.
Yeah, well, you got to remember too, by the way, he's run like on every kind of surface. You know, he ran at Arlington Park on the poly track. He ran on the turf at Arlington Park. You know, he's run on a fast track. He's run at Ellis Park. He's run, you know, Aqueduct. He's run all kinds of tracks. Yeah, and then you come to Tyshawn, and again, he's another horse. We have no idea how good he is. He was a horse that was a come-from-behind horse, and he took the lead in his last start in the slop, and he just drew off. And he beat actually a pretty good field. There was a horse in the race that I liked a lot who's in this race but drew poorly. This horse Background, who was very impressive breaking his maiden, and he didn't have the best of trips here, and he made a big move, and he wound up third. I thought it was a good race here. Can't count out Digital. I mean, he looked like he was going to be a really good horse. So he has not run really a bad race. His race in the Risen Star wasn't bad at all. He was right up on the pace, and he got a little tired at the end. But, you know, I mean, you know, Brad Cox's horse is coming off a nice race in the again, it's not against much in the Rushaway. Then you got the Background. Then you got Farmington Road, who I've been touting all year, who cannot draw a decent post. You know, I mean, he draws way on the outside in the Risen Star. Then he draws on the also eligibles, and he doesn't get in. Now he's got the post. What is he? 11 or 12? 12, I think. Or 12. So he's stuck on the outside in this race. And I, you know, they're pretty high on this horse. I know that. And I've been touting him. I think he's a really nice horse. So he's going to have to come from way out of it again and take back. And then the speed horse in the race that looked so good in the Smarty Jones and looked so bad in the Southwest, where he was beaten off badly, his Gold Street, he drew on the far outside. So he's going to have to bust out of there. So he hasn't run since the Southwest. I don't know what happened to him in that race. I mean, he just never, I think the main thing is that he just never got the lead. He broke in a tangle. There was a lot of traffic, and he never got anywhere close to the lead. And some horses, they're not up on the pace. They just chuck it. And I think he just gave it up, and he just basically was being eased or so.
Well, you can also fold in, you know, he is going into the Southwest. He was, we discussed this extensively. He was a gigantic bet against after that opening day, that opening weekend, in fact, at Oaklawn, January 24th, 25th, 26th, where there was the tremendous inside speed bias.
Right.
And he rode that to the Smarty Jones win. And then, frankly, the other part of it is you look at his record now, and he had won three straight races on wet tracks. And, you know, now, frankly, we are probably looking at a wet track on Saturday, the 80% chance of rain at
Oakland
on Saturday. But
I understand. How often does it rain in Hot Springs? I mean, wet springs.
Well,
I mean,
it's been late.
It's constantly there. They have more sloppy tracks than any racetrack I've ever seen.
Well, fairgrounds during the rainy period in New Orleans, they get their share. It does seem that it's a wet spring in Hot Springs. Usually that weather, that rainy, cold type weather with a little snow, that's usually a January, February thing. By now, it should have relented, and it hasn't. There's been
this was the secretariat in the slop.
Well,
I mean, he's 3-3 in the slop, and he's won them all by huge, big margins. So, but because of that inside bias and the way he won that race, by the way, that's why I really got to love, even though I loved him in his maiden race, that's why I loved Three Techniques race when he ran second in that race to him.
Right, because he was against the bias.
Clear-cut second. That's when I knew Three Technique was the real deal. Because, you know, he was wide in that race, and he closed well and, you know, basically maintained the same margin, you know, from the eighth pole to the wire. Gold Street couldn't really pull away from him, and he was pulling away from everybody else. So I knew Three Technique was good because Gold Street had everything his own way. He's certainly not going to be enhanced by any rail bias on Saturday.
Well, it's hard to know yet. Let's see what happens with this. You mean because he's posted out wide,
yeah.
You know, you look at just as a proviso too. You look at this field. Basin has got a win in a third on a wet track. Coach Baez has got a win in a second and three tries on wet tracks. Two for two, Sir Rick, on wet tracks. How about a second and third for Shoplifted on wet tracks? A win and a second for Digital on wet tracks. Tayshan is one for one. That allowance win came in the wet.
Nice.
Background has got two thirds, and because I was there for 1,000 words, he won that Los Al. That was a sort of sealed good wet surface. And then Gold Street, three for three on wet track. So there's a ton of mudlark form on this page.
Okay, well, that's good. And the one horse that doesn't is poor 1,000 words who had to ship.
Well, no, he had wet.
Miles.
He had wet. He had that day.
Well,
it was close out.
It was slightly off. You know,
it was sealed.
You know, you never know at Los Al what the track is. I think it was. I think he went on a good track, right?
Yeah, it was. It had that clump
yeah.
sound to
Rocky
it.
Pioneer of the Niles loved the off track, so
yeah. So that I wouldn't worry about him. I the fact that he's showing up here is notable. I have not watched those last two works of his.
They're very impressive. He desperately needs a race. I mean, he worked 25 and change, and then comes back and works 12 and change. And you can see Baffert was counting on him running in the San Anita Derby, you know, with Authentic.
Sure.
So, you know, the horse desperately needs a race. Not only that, you don't want that last race hanging over his head so long. You want to give him an opportunity to get his confidence back, to get back in the win column or at least to run well, because he just ran such a dull race last time. And like I said, you can always forgive a horse one race, but you want to see him come back. And it's been a long time already. And if he doesn't run here, you're going to have to wait a few more months or so before you can run him again. And he's got, you know, you got this, as Jerry Seinfeld would say, you got this matzo ball hanging over your head. And you don't want that. You want to give the horse an opportunity to, you know, get back on the winning track. Not that this is no easy spot to do that, but he needed to run him. He needed to run him somewhere.
Yeah, no, I sense that, and I don't know what I'm doing in here yet. It's a very very nice field, and it makes Oakland the focus on Saturday, because not only is there also the Oaklawn Mile, where Tom Zdetat makes his return, but you've got a very good maiden group of three-year-olds. Who knows what's going to come out of there?
There's five races for three-year-olds. Allowances,
yep.
Maidens, sprints, two-turn races. I mean, I that's in some ways, it's like the Derby Trail, if you want to call it that. It's kind of fascinating now, because normally by now, you know, if there's like a six or a seven furlong maiden race, or even an allowance race, you don't pay any attention to it, because, you know, horses are running now in grade one races. They're running in all the big major preps.
Yep.
No horse running in allowance races or maiden races is going to have any impact. But now you can project ahead. You know, you look ahead
yep.
four months or so,
yep.
And you don't know. There was a horse that ran last week. I mean, I wrote like four paragraphs on this horse because I was so impressed with it. This horse, Sonneman.
Yeah,
I went back and watched his maiden race too, and I watched the head on, and I'm saying, "Whoa!" I said, "This horse could be something." That was very impressive. And I know the pace was incredibly slow, and they came, incredibly fast, and they came home very slow. But my God, how far back he was! And then you're watching his maiden race, where he came home in 23 and changed. You know the horse can close, but watching his stride, watch the way he holds his legs under him. Perfect. I mean, perfect stride to him. Attractive, almost black horse. Just everything about this horse, and I love his pedigree. He's like Curlin. He's out of Zardana. You know, beat Rachel Alexandra. And I think this was, you know, by the time September rolls along, he could be one of the Derby favorites. You know, you don't know. I mean, this is a very good horse. And normally I would never, ever pay any attention to a race like that. 7 furlong allowance race? Who's going to pay attention to it, in April? But now you got to pay attention to them. That's why you got to pay attention to all these races at Oaklawn. You have no idea what's going to come out of them. And, you know, we've seen it. That horse Candy Machine, that race looks like it was a good race. I mean, you're getting all these horses. Who knows if you're seeing the next Arrogate pop up around this time of the year.
Exactly. You've got a...
And it was no great shakes. Arrogate won an allowance race by, what, a length and a half, length and three quarters in a three-horse field, and then goes on and wins Travers by 15 lengths in track record time. So, you know, you don't have to come out and win by 8 lengths, something like that. You know, if you see something you like, these horses are progressing now. So it makes it, in some ways, it makes it very, very fascinating in a way.
No, agreed. In that allowance race that's going to go a mile, maiden race, the 7th that's going a mile and a 16th, you got a second-time starter of the Lieblongs, a Carpe Diem colt they paid 4.25 for, Earner, who actually ran a race behind Echo Town in the debut in January that should have been enough to break a maiden, 86 buyer in that spot. So Earner will be your clear favorite in here. Wayne Catalano's got a horse on the rail called Pit Boss, who's a Union Rags out of Town Flirt, and just happen to know that family because Town Flirt was a sibling of Mrs. Weber's Win with a Wink, or With a Wink, who was the dam of Win with a Wink. I saw that.
Take a look at Donnie Von Hembel's horse.
Yeah,
the Tonus Cope. Look where he came from. He came from absolutely nowhere and was absolutely flying at the end of that race at 35-1. You know, he had broken terribly, and you know, Tonus, he got a good young sire out of a line for your mare. It was bred in Oklahoma, but you know, who knows how good he is? We don't know how good the Tonus are yet. But like I said, you just have no idea who's coming out of this race. You know, if you go by speed ratings, Earner's certainly got the best of the speed ratings. I mean, how many good 3-year-olds does Steve Asmussen have? I mean, like, is there a 3-year-old race that he's not in? Sometimes he's got 3 or 4 in one race. I mean, he's got them everywhere.
But
this is not the kind of year you want the Derby delayed, especially like if you're Asmussen or Baffert. You got all these horses that are, you know, ready for the Derby now, and they just have to wait. Like I said, you don't know who's going to be coming along, who's going to be coming along late. Peter Urton, you know, Peter Urton's all over the place. He's got a horse in here that could be any kind. He's getting really good. His speed ratings are climbing with every race. He just barely got beat in his last start. This horse, Absolute Unit. Again, we have no idea how good this horse might be. He's Will Take Charge out of a St. Pilato mare. He could be, he's bred to go on. But every you talk about a horse who's getting better with every single race. You know, if he runs a big race here, you know, he's a horse you have to watch out for. You just don't know. And you got a bunch of maiden races. You got a 2-turn maiden race. You got a 1-turn maiden race.
Well, you got the two divisions. You've got two divisions of the mile and a 16th. You got the 7th and the 10th. And the 7th, it feels like the 7th is the tougher of the two.
Yeah, sometimes that doesn't work out.
Exactly. You never, that's right. That's right. You never know. Well, Steve, this was terrific. I appreciate it. A lot of fun. Let's look forward to Saturday. It should keep everybody busy. And we'll have some recapping. And then, you know, then we'll have to tread water until we begin to get a feel for when the calendar is going to start to pick up. Yesterday, Naira announcing that the opening of the Oklahoma is delayed with no timetable yet, but they still feel confident that we'll be all right for Saratoga. So,
well, we, you know, that we go up there every year, you know, in May for the historic house tour. You know, so we're going to miss, unfortunately, we're going to miss that. Because that's always great. You go up there, you walk out the back, and, you know, Oklahoma is busy as heck with all the Pletcher two-year-olds and the Chad Brown two-year-olds. You know, all the future stars are out there in Oklahoma in May.
That's
it's
right.
a great time
that's
to right. be at Saratoga because you don't know what you're looking at. And so just watching these horses train, looking at them, and trying to get an image in your mind of who these horses are so you can... So you can remember them, you know, if they show up. But I mean, all their big horses, all the big trainers, Belmont, all his babies are up there, and Clement, and it's a great time to be up there. So unfortunately, I'm going to miss that. But listen, everybody's missing everything. So
exactly right. Well, don't miss what Steve's been writing about. He's keeping busy and keeping everybody entertained. Steve, I appreciate it, and we'll catch up next week. Thanks. Steve Askin, folks. Let's take a break, probably our last of the morning, and Alan Foreman is going to join us. And we've got three or four things to cover with Alan, including yesterday's news, unfortunately, that the Match Series, which was coming back for year three since its resurrection, had to be canceled. And Alan will tell us, you know, what the thoughts are and, you know, if there's going to be any kind of, you know, option, you know, once Mid-Atlantic tracks reopen. And then, of course, last week, the Mid-Atlantic meeting that was done by teleconference and the annual spring get-together. I went to it last year, and it was fascinating and has been so productive as the industry uses the Mid-Atlantic model for reducing injuries and fatalities. We'll talk about that, and we'll see if Alan's got any update from Annapolis and Governor Hogan's office, and Governor Hogan emerging as one of the chief executives in amongst the states that has been really terrific through this situation. For the most part, a lot of the state executives have been impressive. Others less so. We will have Alan Foreman join us when we come back at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code Sport of Kings when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years old and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gaming Support Line 800-522-4700.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn
the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program